Everyone's experience is unique to them. This podcast contains the personal story, experience, and opinions of the speaker, rather than that of Breast Cancer Now. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of people who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers, and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello, I'm Em, and today I'll be speaking with Jen. In 2017, Jen received a de novo diagnosis of secondary breast cancer, meaning she never had a primary diagnosis. Since then, she has worked alongside Breast Cancer Now as part of our secondary breast cancer campaign. Jen, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much, Em. It's lovely to be here.
Could you start off by telling us a little bit about your diagnosis? What prompted you to get your symptoms checked out?
So I had a very unusual symptom. Cancer wasn't even in my mind at all. I had a very, very hoarse voice, and it was like I'd lost my voice. And I went to my GP, and we thought it was laryngitis, so that's fine. So we went away and rested, and 5 weeks later, still there. So then my GP thought, well, we'll just double check. I don't think it's anything, but we'll just double check and get you sent to ENT. And so ENT, I went, and it turns out I had a paralysed left vocal cord. And the doctor was very, very nice and very lovely. And, you know, he said, these things can just happen. It could be a one-off. Or it could be causing it. But at no point in my mind did I think, oh, cancer could be here, you know. So I thought, well, we'll get a CT scan and we'll find out. So I got the CT scan and came back, and I was away with work at the time. Took a phone call from the doctor, who I thought was very kind, phoning me up and, you know, not waiting. And he said, I've got some bad news for you. I said, oh, what is it? And he said, well, you've got advanced breast cancer. And, of course, not having that on the horizon, I said, all right, okay. So he said, have a think about it. He said, you need to come home from your work trip and go straight to the breast clinic. So I thought, well, what's this advanced breast cancer? So that's really my story of how I was diagnosed.
Yeah, I've had a few of these conversations now, and not once has someone said, I went to the doctor for so-and-so symptoms, you know, and it led to a breast cancer diagnosis. And initially they were referred to ear, nose and throat. That's not really the natural progression of things.
It's not, is it?
So yeah. I assume that had never been on your mind. You hadn't suspected breast cancer at all at that point.
No, and I had, you know, I regularly checked my breasts and I thought I was doing the right thing, and I was looking for lumps. And of course, in hindsight, knowing what I know now, there was a little bit of dimpling, and that should have been a trigger. And I'd had it for quite a while. I just thought, you know, I thought it was gravity or something. There's always something you can put it down to if you don't feel that lump trigger. So, yeah, very, very left field, that diagnosis.
Of course. And prior to this, you say you've been checking your breasts, so you were aware of risks. But how much did you know about breast cancer before you were diagnosed?
So I knew about it from things that I'd seen in the media. I have friends who have gone through breast cancer, and I thought, well, you know, my friends have gone through it. They've had treatment, whether that was chemotherapy or surgery, radiotherapy, and they're now through it. And I thought that breast cancer was something you just took on and you got through it.
So in comparison to what your friends went through then, were you kind of expecting to go through the same process? And how did your treatment differ?
So when I was first diagnosed, when I got that phone call and he said, you've got advanced breast cancer, I thought, what even is advanced breast cancer? So you obviously go to Dr. Google, which we all say you shouldn't, but it's just a natural thing. You want to find out more. And everywhere we're saying advanced breast cancer is incurable. I thought, well, that can't be right. That's not me. And I totally was like, oh, I've picked this up wrong or something. And when I got to the breast clinic in Edinburgh, it's wonderful. You get everything done in the same day and then you'll get your diagnosis. So when I went there, I got all the tests and they confirmed, yes, actually it was breast cancer. I had biopsies taken to find out what kind it was. And it was HER2 positive, ER and PR. Positive, so triple positive breast cancer. And of course, these are all things. I thought there was only one type of breast cancer. I didn't know, you know, there was HER2, there was ER, there was all these different things, triple negative. And so it's only when you're in that world, that cancer world, that you start to do a bit of research and you make friends in that community. And the cancer community is such an amazing community and I've learned so much from. But yeah, I totally thought, going back to my friends, it would be done and dusted and back to work and my life wouldn't change. You know, I would take a year out and that would be it.
Yeah, of course. So since that point, could you just speak to any treatments that you did have from there? Initially you got the news, and then what was the next steps for you?
So next steps was chemo. Mm-hmm. And again, didn't really know what to expect from chemo. I had friends that had gone through it and had an awful time, and friends that had gone through it and had an okay time. Mm. And so we prepared for the worst. And actually, apart from my first chemo, which I took a bad reaction to, which was docetaxel, I was then put on to paclitaxel, which was much gentler, and I got every week instead of once every 3 weeks. And I got Herceptin as well. So, yeah, I lost my hair, did about 5 months of chemotherapy, but it worked so well. I took a great response to it. So that was the first thing. And then when I finished chemo, I then went on to estrogen therapy as well. So I started taking letrozole. Mm-hmm. So that's the triple positive side of things. So then I had my sort of targeted drugs, if you like, Herceptin and letrozole. And I'm still on them today. I'm very, very lucky. I'm on my first line treatment. So I know I have got quite a few options ahead of me should I get, and when I get progression. And then I think it was a few months later, I got radiotherapy as well, just to be done and dusted, I think. And since then, I have had no evidence of active disease in my body, which is great. The cancer is still there. It's just too microscopic to see on any scans at the moment. So very, very lucky.
Yeah, that's obviously fantastic news. And I'm glad, despite that initial, just so out of nowhere, this diagnosis, that you were then able to go and get treatment that has worked for you. And that's brilliant. And also you were somewhat more proactive in your reaction as well, because you didn't just, go and get your treatment and help yourself. You also joined Breast Cancer Now as part of the Unsurvivors campaign.
I did, yes.
Yeah, I was wondering if you could just tell me a little bit about what that entails and what prompted you to get involved in that.
So if you take it one step back, initially I got involved with Breast Cancer Now because when I was diagnosed, my oncologist said, well, I've got to tell you about this drug called Perjeta. Mm-hmm. I can't give it to you on the NHS, it's not available. But if you have private healthcare, then we could give it to you and it would give you 12 to 18 months extra to live. And unfortunately, I don't have private healthcare. And I thought, well, that's not right.
Yeah.
So I campaigned with Breast Cancer Now. We successfully, I think it was January 2019, Perjeta was approved on the NHS in Scotland. So caught up with the rest of the UK, wonderful. And I saw the impact that campaigning had. And so I was very keen to get involved in any more secondary breast cancer campaign with Breast Cancer Now. And so that led to the Unsurvivors campaign. And I just wanted to be there for me, so that my voice was heard. I wanted to be there for the people that maybe don't feel so confident in front of the camera or up there and speaking. And I wanted to make a difference so that when people are diagnosed, they don't go, oh my God, like I did, my life is over. That's it. I'm going to die. Mm. It's actually, there's someone with secondary breast cancer, advanced breast cancer, who is surviving. My life is completely different to how it was, but I still have a pretty good life, you know?
Mm. And for anyone who is unfamiliar with the campaign, just in your own words, could you sort of just describe what the objectives are of the campaign are and how you have actually got involved in that?
Yeah, so I went down, we had three meetings in London, and pre-COVID, obviously, we could still travel. And it was great to meet up with people who had secondary breast cancer from all the UK nations and make those connections that I still have today. And we did great workshops, three really positive workshops on what was important for people with secondary breast cancer. And the outcomes were amazing. We had over 70,000 people who signed a campaign for the asks that we were making. And that went to the cancer minister in the UK Parliament. And our key, I suppose, our key calls were, we wanted everyone to have a secondary breast cancer nurse. I'm so lucky that I'm being treated in Edinburgh because we have a team of secondary breast cancer nurses. Any issues, if I don't feel well, anything at all, pick up the phone and they're always there. And they can liaise them with my oncologist if there's any issues, and he'll come back to them. So that's great. But some people still don't have a secondary breast cancer nurse. We wanted data collected. So a key thing in making change is the data. How many people does secondary breast cancer affect? Well, we don't know. In the UK, it's an estimate of 35,000 people are living with secondary breast cancer, but we don't know. And one of the brilliant things that's just happened is that NHS England have agreed, after 15 years of Breast Cancer Now campaigning, to run an audit in England and find out exactly how many people are living with secondary breast cancer. And that's going to be fantastic for everybody. It's going to be fantastic. And my hope, and I will continue to campaign in Scotland so that Scotland start to count those numbers as well. And I know that work will go on in Northern Ireland and in Wales as well. So that's phenomenal. Finally, we will have numbers to say, look, these are the actual number of people living with breast cancer. We need secondary breast cancer nurses. We need GPs to be informed of the signs and symptoms of secondary breast cancer. We need, we just need this data to make change. And so it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. We need access to clinical trials. We need access to medication. That's going back to Perjeta.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have to campaign all the time to get a drug approved, but you know, that's the way it seems to go. And Breast Cancer Now are our biggest hope for effecting change for secondary breast cancer. Absolutely.
And it's so fantastic that you were able to get involved in that. But in what you're saying, it just highlights how secondary breast cancer has been kind of ignored to some extent. I mean, 15 years of campaigning, that's a very long time just to get an audit.
I know.
That's when you put it in those terms, and also I suppose there's so much ignorance around it as well. Like when you were first diagnosed, you didn't really know what a secondary breast cancer diagnosis was.
Absolutely.
It's not spoken about enough. And you have said that your life is different now. I wonder if you could talk a bit more about that, if you wouldn't mind.
Absolutely. So when I was diagnosed, I was working in a university, heading up timetabling. Loved my job. But from an IT background, it was great. I had great colleagues. I just absolutely loved it. And I was working hard. And I had two teenage girls to look after. And I had a couple of wee dogs to look after. I had my husband, family, you know, just a busy, busy, normal life. And I was tired. That was another symptom. I was tired a lot, but I just, you know, we write these things off and we shouldn't. It was a change to my normal. And that's one key thing I would like to get across. Know your normal. What is normal for you? If you're having additional tiredness, that's not normal. Get it checked out. If you have dimpling on your breast, like I did, it's a change to your normal, so get that checked out. And these are key things. So now my life is very different. I have had to take ill health retirement because I really suffer badly with fatigue. And cancer fatigue, or any fatigue really, is just, it's not tiredness. It doesn't go away when you have a rest. It just is constant and all-consuming. And so I have to plan my life very carefully so that I don't overdo it, but I still push myself a little bit so that I get, you know, it's better for my mental health. So I try and get out with my dogs once a day. My husband does my husband's taking the brunt of this a lot, actually. You know, his life has changed so much as well, not just mine. So if we go out, or, you know, we don't tend to go out at night so much because I do get tired, but if we were to go out or have a big day of doing something, then I would make sure I planned ahead and rested the day before and then had rest afterward. And that seems to work okay. But yeah, very different. It's a quiet life, but it's a great life. And I'm so, so thankful for it. Because, you know, when I was first diagnosed, I thought, that's it. I'm dead, you know.
But yeah, like you say, mm-hmm. there's treatments and they're working. And you've been able to access this treatment that, I mean, sadly, so many people couldn't before if they were in Scotland. And it's wonderful that you have that. And I think when you said, know your normal, that is so important. And that's something that Breast Cancer Now is also working quite hard to get people to be aware of signs and symptoms, especially when, you know, lesser known symptoms, as you pointed out, like fatigue. People might not instantly link that with breast cancer, but it could be an indicator of any number of things. So it's difficult to know.
It's very difficult, but just get it checked. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. And you mentioned there taking care of your mental health. Would you mind talking a bit more about that? I think that's very important as well, and people might not really consider that side of things.
So important, so important. And, you know, your mind takes you to the absolute worst place. So you've got an incurable diagnosis. We can treat you, but we can't cure you. So you then go to some very dark places, and your family and your friends go to dark places as well. But then as time goes on, you think, oh, I'm still here. You know, I'll be 4 years in October from my diagnosis. I never thought in my wildest dreams that I would still be here.
Mm.
You know, it's just incredible. But I have to be very careful, because if I get too fatigued, my mood and my mental health do dip. And one of the key things I would say to anybody is, you know, some people prefer to be on their own and work through their own feelings. But certainly for myself, I thrive on being able to speak to other people in my situation. So I have a fantastic support network of people with secondary breast cancer. And they get it.
Mm.
They get if I phone up and say, listen, I can't manage it, I'm absolutely exhausted. No problem. You know, it's not a problem. They understand, they've been there. And we talk about if anyone's had prognosis, or, you know, we just stand there. I'm in one group actually, and we call each other our columns, because we just prop each other up and carry the person that needs to be carried at that particular time. And that is amazing for my mental health.
Mm, so lovely to have that support and that unity amongst people that can understand you to the point where a lot of other people can't, because it is very much a personal experience. Have you ever gone along to any of the Breast Cancer Now living with secondary groups at all?
Yes, I went to my first one and then the pandemic hit.
Ah.
So that was cancelled, and I really enjoyed it, because again, getting together in a room with people that get it and being guided by a facilitator. I was so looking forward to going to more because we had great, you know, we had creative writing when we were going to do one week, we had something else. So it's not necessarily, you know, all focused around secondary breast cancer. There's something you're doing as well as that. And I think naturally the conversations can flow and the support can be there. So I know that's gone online, and there's been a great development online in a forum and everything to support that during the pandemic. But it would be lovely just to be able to go out and have a coffee and a chat with these people again. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you're so right. That personal connection is really important. And I think everyone's felt that loss a little bit over the last however long it's been now, year and a half. But yeah, it's so important just to have those in-person conversations, that support, especially with your columns that are clearly, like, you are so supportive of one another.
Yeah.
And I mean, in this group, obviously, you're able to relate to one another. And what are some things then that people outside of this circle might not understand about secondary breast cancer? What are some misconceptions that are out there that you've encountered?
I'd say there's two, and they're very opposite ends of the spectrum. So one is the misconception that I had, it's incurable and I'm going to die within months.
Mm.
That's absolutely what I thought, and that's what my whole family and friends. And that is not true anymore. Yes, that will happen to some people, but again, it depends on when you're diagnosed.
Mm.
If you can catch it early. I was very lucky. I was just into stage 4 secondary, and we caught it just in time for it to spread too far. And obviously, if you have it or are diagnosed with it later on, then it can have spread throughout your body. But there's still options. As long as you have your options, you know, that's all we cry. And, you know, Herceptin, which I'm on now, wasn't around 20 years ago. So these fantastic scientists, along with Breast Cancer Now funding research, we are getting to so many more. There's so many more drugs in the pipeline to come. So, I think that option of we have options for you, we can treat you, and you can live, you can still live a life. That's one. The other thing is, as I've gone on, it's kind of the polar opposite to this, is I seem to be having, to people looking in, they say, oh, well, Jane's not cured, but Jane's living very well with cancer and is able to do this and that and everything. And on, you know, on social media and everything like that, I appear to be having a nice life, but still it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard, hard, hard when you lose friends that you've made connections with and you love, and they're dying from the same disease that you have. And so part, you're devastated because you've lost your friend, but it also gives you a wee knock, knock. There's a reminder, Jane, that's what your future is at some point. And so whilst it's still on the surface looks like I'm having a good life, it's a hard life, and it's hard to manage side effects like fatigue. I was saying other people have a lot worse side effects than I do. So yeah, just because it's just because I carry it well doesn't mean it's not hard.
Yeah,
not heavy.
Yeah, you're totally right, and I'm glad you said that, because I think we have a tendency to try and not sugarcoat these narratives, but we have a tendency to try and lift up narratives that say like it's fine, it's going to be okay, and just only show those positive moments. Mm-hmm. But it is very important to acknowledge the struggle as well, especially when we have things like the Unsurvivors campaign that is showing that more needs to be done, and without showing those struggles, people aren't really going to listen as much, are they?
So, absolutely. And that was, yeah, you know, that was the full aim of the campaign, was to let these change makers know that we need their help and we need their part, and to be very, very hard hitting with the facts and the figures and what kind of lives we're leading. So that was a very important key message to get across.
Mm.
And I'm a great advocate of hospices. Hospices are not just somewhere to go and die, and they're not just end of life. They are very much a place. They have an outpatients, and they're very much there to get help you get on top of your symptoms, help you come to terms with your diagnosis. I've had lovely healing massages. I've had group work. I've had fantastic. And it very much settled my mind into a more comfortable place and accepting of my diagnosis, because I think only when you accept it is you can move on. And it's hard to accept. It's hard to process it. And sometimes only time will help you with that.
Thank you. I think that's a brilliant note to end on. Yeah, thank you so much. It's a fantastic insight. And it's really, it's great for me personally to hear from someone who's actually been part of the Unsurvivors campaign. Obviously, I get to be part of Breast Cancer Now, but you've actually done the hard work there. So thank you.
I would like to say a very big thank you to everybody involved in Breast Cancer Now, because I know you've had, especially this past year with the pandemic, it's been hard. And it's hard to keep pushing and pushing and challenging and keep going, but you kept going. Look what you did for the Unsurvivors campaign. 15 years you've been campaigning to try and get the NHS to say, yeah, we will count patients who are living with secondary breast cancer. Not just when they die, but when they're living. That can affect change. We Breast Cancer Now got behind the Perjeta campaign. There was Kadcyla that wasn't available. These two drugs are keeping people alive. And without Breast Cancer Now, who knows when we might have got them. So every single person in Breast Cancer Now, no matter what your role is, you are all contributing to make our lives better and to give us the best chance of living as long as we possibly can. So thank you from me to everyone at Breast Cancer Now. I think you're doing an amazing job.
Oh, that's lovely. And obviously a massive thank you to supporters who managed to keep it going. I mean, they're the lifeblood of Breast Cancer Now.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely, we're a team, you know, you need us, we need you, and we're absolutely behind you, and we'll give you absolutely anything you need to make these changes, and in turn then helps us and others. So that's key, very important.
Thank you so much for speaking with me today, Jen. Where can people keep up with you if they want to find a bit more about you?
So I have an Instagram account, which I love. It's my way of keeping in contact with amazing people, especially in the cancer community. And it's at my new normal underscore. And I have the same on Facebook. So you can find me there.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, we will make sure to link those in the notes. And we'll also include some details about the Unsurvivors campaign so people can find out a bit more about that. But it's been really lovely speaking to you. Please keep up with the sharing your story. I think it's really amazing, and it's fantastic to actually get these narratives out there. So thank you so much, Jen.
Thank you, Em.
You can learn more about Breast Cancer Now's secondary breast cancer campaign at breastcancernow.org/unsurvivors. Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.